Do you know that the human body literally glows? Past research has shown that the body emits visible light 1,000 times less intense than the levels to which our naked eyes are sensitive. We emit a visible light in extremely small quantities at levels that rise and fall with the day. People often comment about a person's cheerful appearance or sunny disposition by saying they are positively glowing. Women with child are said to have a certain glow. When actors or athletes win an important award, they appear to be glowing with understandable pride. And people speak of brides and grooms as glowing with joy. Parents glow with pride as they watch their children perform in a school play. So while glowing is perhaps a figurative way to express the joy on one's face, it is literally true. That kind of glow has nothing in common with gloating and is far more than a smile of pleasure or appreciation. More than joy, we seem to glow in moments of genuine fulfillment and love. When we understand what has caused a person to glow, that sort of feeling to shine forth from others, then we get a glimpse of their deepest desires and the essence of who they are. Usually we need to know a person well to recognize that on their face. Models and actors try to imitate it as they promote a product that is supposed to create the feeling, but they usually just come off as people who should be advertising toothpaste. We can't fake genuine joy and integrity. So what Peter, James, and John saw happen to Jesus as he prayed on the mountain was that something glorious was hidden in his person. Perhaps they had been hoping for a sign from heaven to confirm that Jesus was the one Israel was waiting for. Maybe it hadn't occurred to them that Jesus might be the sign from heaven they sought. However, apparently, it took the mountaintop setting, radiant light, and an inexplicable presence of two famous and historically holy men to cue these disciples. So was the transfiguration then a huge celestial prop arranged to wise up the feeble followers of Jesus? Was Jesus hoping they would understand him when they shared in his prayer? Just 8 days before, Jesus gave the disciples the first of three explanations of his upcoming passion, death, and resurrection. But they couldn't grasp it. So he invited them into his experience of prayer. Moses and Elijah speak with Jesus about his upcoming exodus, the suffering and death he knew he was facing, and God's promised unimaginable third day. Again, the disciples probably understood this no more than they had understood his prediction about his coming passion. I mean, what would have been your reaction on that mountain? The transfigured Jesus, dazzling that hour on the mountain, bookend by the prophets, was the same Jesus who walked and talked with his friends for years. This radiant Jesus went to his crucifixion, rose on Easter, lives in his church today, and comes to us in word and sacrament and in the least of our sisters and brothers. So how do we receive the Holy Presence with understanding in all of its forms? Are we still looking for a mountaintop view, special lighting, and a little fire? What is it about Jesus that makes you glow? Does he make you glow at all? As we heard in today's reading from Genesis, God had led Abram to marvel at the stars of the night in order to engender his trust. And when Jesus invited his disciples to be with him in prayer, he allowed them to see the most intimate and deepest dimension of his being. And that led to the greatest revelation they had ever received. They never explain how they heard God's voice, but they got the message. Listen to him. And as if to underline that message, when the voice had finished, they saw only Jesus, he who was all they needed. In the spiritual life, we might intend to live as children of the light, but unless we have eyes to see and ears to hear God working in our midst, we miss the opportunity to live into the fullness of life which Jesus promises to his followers. Although we can't go up that same mountain, nor enjoy encounters with God as Abraham did, we can contemplate Jesus in the Gospels and, like disciples, learn how he is God for us in every sense of the phrase. We have the advantage of the disciples' insight, but we must still discover for ourselves what it means to listen to him in our own time. And that means we too must come to know Jesus well, and like the disciples, we must allow ourselves to be overshadowed by God's presence. Through that sort of listening, we will be lured into adopting Jesus' own hopes and prayer. And then, on occasion, our faces too will glow. Wants to share with you his journey so far toward the priesthood.
Good morning, everyone. I promise this won't be long. My name is Peter Vail, as Father mentioned. I'm a seminarian at Notre Dame Seminary on Carrollton. I'm a third-year theologian, so I'm nearing the end of my journey. And the purpose of this talk has, there's basically two parts. The first is to thank you for all of your prayers and support on behalf of my brother seminarians, and to ask you to please continue that. It's a special time in the church, despite all the stuff that's going on that you're seeing in the news. A bunch of guys are still coming forward to discern the call. So praise God for that. I found out that the incoming class for next year is almost at a record number. So that's very inspiring. So please keep that up, and thank you so much. The second is to give you a little bit about my journey. I'm 35, so there's quite a bit to it, but I'm going to keep it pretty short. I was born and raised in Boston, so I'm a Yankee Patriots fan, but I'm trying to switch over to the Saints. We'll see. I was at that game, so I feel for y'all. I was up there up until college. I studied linguistics, and I'm very fascinated by the dialect and all the variety down here with language, and it fascinates me. But my family moved to Florida. I'm second oldest of nine kids, so there's 11 in the family. And they relocated to Southwest Florida, Marco Island, if any of y'all know that, when I was like 20. So that became home. I followed them after I graduated college. I thought about going to the seminary all the way since I was like these guys' age here, altar serving. It was in the back of my mind forever. my spiritual director actually advised me against it, which was good advice. So I ended up going to, you know, the normal college route, which was great. But it came back in my face when I was teaching theology at a Catholic high school after I graduated college, a Catholic high school in Naples. And it was just put back in my face, and I decided to pursue it. So I studied, I was studying for the Diocese of Venice, which is Southwest Florida. And I did my pre-theology, my philosophy years in Miami, two of those. And then the bishop sent me to Rome. And I was there for about 2.5 years before I jumped ship, or as we call it, discerned out. I went back into the working, dating world and lived back in Naples, Florida. But I have a friend who I went to seminary with in Miami who's a deacon for this archdiocese, Dan Darman, and he's going to be ordained a priest in June. And I would come visit, stay at the seminary. I met Archbishop Amon, Father Billy O'Riordan, if any of y'all know him, a bunch of priests. And just coming here 3 or 4 times, the Lord put it back on my radar in a way I couldn't ignore. And I decided to come back in and give it another shot. So I started this past August, and praise God, it's been awesome. I feel like I am where I'm called to be, and I'm inspired by all of you. So especially a parish this vibrant. It's very inspiring to me. And the schools and all the stuff that y'all have here in New Orleans is also very interesting. The Catholicity of it all inspires me. So you should be proud of that. I think it's easy to take for granted if you're a native. But coming in from the outside, it's something that's very special. So anyways, all right, enough about me. I look forward to meeting all of you after Mass. I'll be at the main doors. And again, thank you for all of your prayers and support. And please keep that up. Thanks.